The From Byway to Highway series is supported by the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland Sound and Vision Scheme through the television licence fee. This is our first programme in the From Byway to Highway documentary series, which focuses on the Hole in the Wall Road in Dublin 13. Once a quiet country lane, it has now found itself in the middle of the vast development of the Northern Fringe. While the story of the Hole in the Wall Road reflects people's personal lives, it also stands as a mirror to the development of Ireland itself. In 1926, Nancy Farrell Ní Reidí was born. The Minister for Justice, Kevin O'Higgins, appoints a committee on evil literature. The Fianna Fáil party is launched. Celtic crosses were unveiled by Irish pilgrims at the battlefields of France and Flanders in memory of the members of the 16th Irish Division who died during World War I. Sean O'Casey's play The Plough and the Stars causes mayhem and ugly scenes at the Abbey Theatre, Dublin. Douglas Hyde officially opens the Irish Free State's first ever broadcasting service, 2RN, with a decidedly crackly broadcast. And Johnny Hemp and the Kentucky Sonators' Black Bottom dance tune was taking the world by storm. But our story starts in the kitchen of Nancy's cottage on the Hole in the Wall Road, where we are joined by Nancy's son Michael and family dogs Gracie and Rufus amid the basting of lemon chicken and some very heavy-duty chores.
Oh, Danny boy, the pipes are calling from glen to glen and down.
I was a baby in the Rotunda Hospital in 1926. My mum was from Kilbarrick Lane. My granny Hussey, I knew all about my granny, but I barely remember my granddad. The granny Reidí lived in Hoe Junction. My mother and father and myself moved down to the Swan's Nest in Raheny. We lived in a house in Dr. Donnelly's yard. They were old houses, like floods. Their house was along the road. There was about 12 of them in the family. And McCann's were facing that in the yard. Behind them was the field. And we were up at the top. Further down, there was a pump for the water. And two old ladies lived together there. And I think that was all that was living in the yard. It was only a bedroom and a kitchen in our house. One Sunday evening, my mother and father and myself were at our tea. Got a bit stormy. And my mother said, "Look at the roof." And the next thing, there was the roof was blowing off. The men got a rope and tied weights at each end of the rope, and they threw it across the roof to keep the roof from blowing off.
But come ye back when summer's in the meadow.
Well, I wasn't supposed to play in the quarry, which is another one. There's nobody in the quarry. Myself and Mag Fedigan. You'd go up the little hill up behind and you'd run down, and at the end of the hill there was a lake. Now it was a very deep water. My father, Lord of Mercy, was in Dwars, and the owner of the pub called him over and said, "Your daughter and her friend are down in the quarry and you'd better go and bring them home, not they'll be drowned." We were terribly upset that they should tell them. We were stopped from doing it anymore. My cousin Lily lived in number one, the Crescent in Raheny. And I wasn't much older than she was at the time. It was a very bad winter and the wires were down and there was a very deep snow. And Lily was playing in the snow, herself and Marge Dwyer. And she put her hand down into the snow and the wire wrapped itself round her arm and she was electrocuted. I remember seeing Lily's arm, the burn. She was going to make her confirmation, next confirmation coming round.
Oh, Danny boy, oh, Danny boy, I love you so.
Living conditions in Dr. Donnelly's yard were far from ideal, and a move to St. Michael's Cottages on the Hole in the Wall Road was on.
We had to move from the Swan's Nest to the new houses down here. It was all green fields and bikes and things like that. You walked about or you walked to Raheen. It's like our new house you move into, bare and that, you know. No such thing as running water or electricity or anything. Way back then, that was old God's time. There was always a candle. There was always a pump. You go to the pump and you pump up your water. And then the winter would come and there'd be ice and all around it and you couldn't get the water going. It was frozen. People would be trying to get it for something to heat to start the water flowing. It could be the next day before you'd get your cup of tea. There was a pump at the end of this little road, but that wouldn't be always working. You'd have to go down the shores and beyond it to get the water. And it used to be gas. There was four young fellas lived next door. And they had a brush handle and hang the bucket on the sweeping brush and carried the water. But by the time they got home, they'd no water. They didn't have to falling out on the way home. They had a round the water spill. They had to go back for more to wash your clothes. You got a bathtub or anything that would hold a good amount of water and you washed in it the best you could. You could put your ardens into the red cinders or whatever, but mostly you put them on something that already was heated and you put your arden on it. That's an arden. Get the hard bit out. You see the lump of arden. Put that in the fire to heat it and then you put it in there and then they put that down too. And then go ahead and do your ironing. Now here, get a hold of that.
Oh, Jeannie, Mac, the weight of it!
I know.
You'd want some strength, wouldn't yeah. you? And how long would that take to heat?
A couple of hours, put it into the fire before you go to do your ironing.
This big heavy one, you put it on the range. We used to have a range here.
You had to be careful when you were doing it because it was very easy for it to burn yourself.
Yeah, that's how you did your ironing and you heated your water. Mm-hmm. Big heavy pots to put them on the range.
It's not like now when you turn on your cooker or anything now.
But that is the way it was.
We always went into town to do our shopping on a Saturday because we had no grocery shops or anything around. You had the local man with his shop, but he didn't have very much. You bought your potatoes and your butter and your things like that. Maybe somebody was making their communion or that would have to go and get their clothes. These were the big days in town. Christmas time, it all depended on what your circumstances were. If you didn't have any sort of money, you didn't go anywhere. And if you had a decent bit of money, you'd go into town and see Santa Claus.
Given that the Hole in the Wall Road was so isolated, was there much to do socially in the area?
I'd go to the races with my dad, from the time I was a little thing. Oh, well, there'd be a fair amount of people at the races. Like, they wouldn't just come around the area. They'd come from Dublin. The Aldyle races were good. I remember a few air shows in the quarry, in the Swan's Nest. Well, it was broken up in different sections. They went to the airport, where the planes take on and off now. Oh, I used to go to the pictures on my bike in Sutton, me and my friends. You'd know the way of going, that or walk. And we did by times. But it had to be a very, very good picture for to get you to walk there and walk back again. See, we were all only very young at the time. We used to go with Joey Hand or somebody like that. That was our next door neighbour. We were fond of the cowboy pictures. In our time, we had no money, or very little money. So you wanted to go to the pictures. You had to look for your fourpence or whatever it was to get in. We went, say, maybe at weekends. It all depended on the money at home, whether they could afford it or not. Myself and mate Devlin lived down the road. We went to Raheen Youth School. I was 14 when I left school and got a job working out the Scots out there behind us, picking raspberries, strawberries. I was in the tomato houses. And stand for a whole day maybe with a hose in your hand and water, cold water, doing the ground all day long.
Nancy's son Michael takes up the story.
Somebody under the bed, whoever can it be? I feel so very nervous, I call for Joe.
My father was Michael Farrell. He was born in Dublin and he lived in Manor Street till he was about seven.
I mean, Grandad served in the British Army in the First World War. He joined in 1914 because he was at Mass and parish priest whisked them all into a frenzy to go and fight for Little Belgium, which had been overrun by the Hun and the atrocities that were being perpetrated there. So he joined the British Army and he got bullets in the neck in the Somme. He was invalided home. After that, he was redeployed to Salonika and he finished up in Egypt guarding prisoners of war, and he returned to Dublin in 1919. And then there was ex-servicemen's colleges built in Colchester. My grandfather got one and there was 10 of them in the family. My father and his 9 brothers and sisters. So it was a big family. Now, my father left school around 13 or 14. He got a job in the herding fair down in Kilbarrick as a general farm labourer. He ended up in Scots looking after the tomato house, where he'd have to work nights and shovel the anthracite, which could be a couple of tonne up to keep the greenhouses during the cold weather. But the farm labourers there, they worked 6 days a week, had Sunday off. Sometimes they'd get paid on a Monday, so they wouldn't have any money for the weekend. Of the farm labourers of North County Dublin formed the union. At the time, the farm labourers were looking for to work less hours and get paid for holidays. They had a dispute, and the dispute went on, and there was no sign of them going back to work. And in Balgriffin Hall, Jim Larkin said if he didn't go back to work, he wouldn't represent them. And they told him to more or less go and stuff and go back to Dublin. They'd look after themselves. So they stood up to the employers and Jim Larkin. But in Scots, they did a deal where they went into work an hour earlier and they got a half day on the Saturday, but they still had to work the same amount of hours.
While World War II brought general hardship to the country, working in the open near the coast brought greater concern. But the lookout post at Howth Summit signalled incoming bomber aircraft with gunfire. So what was the safety protocol for farm workers in the area?
You knew the plane was going to come down. You were going to try to get away from as quick as you could. That time, Michael, myself and a crowd of them went into the ditch. Some other girl was screaming. You were afraid. What did you do? Where would you go? To get out of the way.
And we all went up to the marrow. Hey there, who's your man? It's only Johnny Ford.
My father met my mother Nancy in Scots.
We go to, you know, where there'd be songs being sung or a bit of music. That was it.
Balgriffin Hall.
Oh, well, that's where they all to go to a dance. Well, I think at around that time it was nearly all Cayley music. We were coming home from the pictures. Myself and Michael. And I fell into the ditch. Just imagine riding your bike and the next thing you hit something, and when you get up off the ground and you're looking into a cow's face. Well, the cow shouldn't have been lying in the middle of the road.
So between cows and ditches you weren't safe on the road.
Yeah, but you didn't know where you were putting your foot. You couldn't see. It was black dark.
My mother and father got married in 1948.
I was 22. I had a dress and a little jacket that went with it, and it had little seams across it, and a little bow to tie it. It was navy. Mrs. Flood in Howth Junction made the dress and the jacket for me.
We moved into St. Michael's College with her mother and father. My mother was an only child, and her father wasn't well. He had a cough. He used to smoke. So in those days, have a cough, they wouldn't associate lung cancer with smoking the way they do it now. And one of the stories is he went to the doctor with his cough. The doctor said the best thing for that is have a few cigarettes, it'll help you cough better. And he died about a year after that. So then there was only the three of them here, mother and father and my grandmother. My father was working in Scots then for another few years, and then there was jobs going in CIE. So he joined CIE as a bus conductor, and after a few years of bus conductor, he went to bus driving until he retired. He died in 2016 in November. It was only a few weeks short of 93. There was 5 of us in the family. It was Bernadette, which is deceased. She died 8 years ago. There's my older brother John. He's retired now. He was lecturing in DCU. There's myself. I worked as a work area manager in the post office. I am retired. My older sister, who was a secondary school teacher, she's only teaching part-time now, adult education. And there's my younger brother, who's living in Biggleswade in England, who was a senior computer analyst. So my father and mother always put a good emphasis on education. as the way to go forward. There are 6 grandchildren and there's 2 great-grandchildren.
As regards neighbours went, now you couldn't say a word against them. When we moved in here, the same people's names are still here. Up to about 5 years ago, we had Carrolls, we'd Moores, mm-hmm. we'd Chandleys, mm-hmm. we had Sheridans, we Hans, we had Connors, we Devlins, and we had Fords, and they all helped one another as best they could. We survived it all anyway. Yes, we survived it all.
While our consideration of the Hole in the Wall Road mainly focuses on the 20th century, its history goes way back, as is explained now by historian and author of Greenfields Gone Forever, Douglas Appleyard.
The Hole in the Wall Road started where we now have the Fire Brigade station, the junction there with Kilbarrick Road and Grange Road, and it goes all the way out to the junction with the road coming down from Campion's Pub. Well, what used to be Campion's Pub. The developers moved in quite early in the 1730s. Edward Noy built the first house in 1738 on a piece of land called Ye Donoghs, D-O-N-N-O-G-H-S. That's where the name the Donaghys came from, and probably Donaghmead. They were modern versions of that. It was a red brick Georgian style house. Many of our older listeners will remember it. It was rather unusual in that as you went out this road, everywhere there were hedges or walls with the odd gate and gate lodge. But in front of the Donaghys, you could see straight into the house in the distance over the green lawn. And it had in front of it what is called a ha-ha. And that was a ditch and bank which allowed you look in but wouldn't allow cattle get out. It had been owned by the family of Nugent from Meath. Edward Noy lived there. He built what's now St. Joseph's. Violet Hill was called then. And one or two other houses in Raheny that have since gone. And they seem to have had quite a lot of money. He obtained some of his land through the penal laws, where if a Protestant claimed the land of a Catholic, they could have it. But he did it through 2 men who did it on his behalf. And the actual copies of the deeds are in the Registry of Deeds, which makes interesting reading. The Hole in the Wall Road, everywhere there were hedges or walls with the odd gate and gate lodge. On the same side, their neighbours lived in a house called The Cottage at first, and then later it was changed to Grange Moor. And probably the most famous person that we know that lived in Grange Moor was Charles J. Hawley, Taoiseach at one time. Next on the left-hand side, opposite Grange Abbey, was New Grove House. It was a smaller house and not quite as old as the Donaghys. And in about the 1850s, the Van Eynd family lived there. The only other big house that I can talk about is the one that we now call Donaghmead. It was owned in the late 1700s by Stuart King, and he was a master in chancery. Quite an important position in the courts in Dublin City. The estate had one of the most beautiful views, they say, looking out across Howth and Dublin and across to Dunleary and so on. As you go out towards the road going down by Grange Abbey to Portmarnock, the earliest cottages out there were built around about the 1900-1901, and then another lot were built in the 1930s. Where does the name come from? That is a very puzzling question. Done a little bit of research, not getting very far with it. the UCD Folklore Commission have kept copies of stories filled out by children in the 1930s. And there was a story collected by Grainne Ní Chomhairle, and she said in it there was once a man who lived in a big house in this district, and he had a son. The man was a Protestant, but he insisted on his son becoming a Catholic, and he put his son out of the house and told him not to come inside his gate again. And the son answered and said, "So shall it be that you shall never come out through it." And when the father died, the son wouldn't let the coffin be brought through the gate, and it had to be taken through the wall. And that is why the place is called Hole in the Wall. Another theory that was passed around the time, and maybe a bit more believable, was that the hole in the wall refers to a gap in the wall of the old church at Grainne Abbey. And it was believed that by placing your head in the gap, you could cure headaches and toothaches. You can take your pick. I can remember the old church at Grainne Abbey from my childhood days. My mother used to go out to visit because for a while she lived in Grainne Abbey House. She always used to say she was a Culchie and she lived in Raheny. The garden in Grainne Abbey House was, to me, a very exciting place, which I wasn't allowed to go down to by myself. There was a pond and beside it the ruins of the old church, very much overgrown, very frightening, but yet it held a fascination. This actual building was the church on the Grange farm of All Hallows Abbey in town, which was where Trinity College is now. But a Grange farm was very important to the monks. They needed food, so it had to be obviously in a place where there was good land for tillage, and Grainne Abbey filled the bill there. There is a story that in 1369, Sir William de Windsor, the Lord Lieutenant at the time, held a parliament in this building, and he kept them there for 3 days. Because it was so small and the people were very cramped in it, they didn't have proper lodgings around, and the members finally voted him the extra expenses which he needs. Funnily enough, the king reversed the decision when he heard of what had happened, so he did stick up for his subjects. By 1630, we know that Grainne Abbey was no longer being used as a church because Mass was being said in Mr. Fitzsimon's house nearby, and that was probably on the road going down towards Baldoyle. Why was the Hole in the Wall Road there in the first place? Obviously, while we're starting at the fire station, its main purpose was probably to give people access from Raheny village out through the old village of Portmarnock and then on to Malahide. So it was quite an important road, both for people bringing their produce from all the different farms along the road into Dublin City. Now, they could have turned right and gone up the Malahide Road and gone down that way, but I think in some ways Raheny might have been the better trip. Also, there were at least two windmills and a water mill in Raheny for milling corn, so I would say that a lot of the grain ended up in the granaries there. Another reason for the road is it may have been used by the people in what was later called Balgriffin Park, known probably to a lot of Dubliners as Scott's Farm. I'll try and describe it to you. If you're up on the Malahide Road at Campion's Pub and you're coming down towards the sea there, before you get to Hole in the Wall Road, into the right there was an entrance to Balgriffin Park. And this old house, I believe, was an important site because halfway up the driveway to the house, on the left-hand side, there was a raised bank. And in the 1940s, a carved slab was found, and it was probably from the 10th century. And this may have been the site of the old Balgriffin Church, dedicated to St. Samson, a Welshman. A lot of the Normans coming into Ireland were Welsh. Many people think of St. Dulach's as the old Balgriffin Church, but in fact there was a separate church, and St. Samson's may also have been the chapel to do with Balgriffin Castle. We're not sure exactly where Balgriffin Castle was. I believe it was on the site of Balgriffin House. Unfortunately, the archaeological digs they did were inconclusive because there was a lot of pressure to build Clongriffin and so on at the time. But Balgriffin Castle was the largest castle in the Pale, and I think it's terrible to think that we just don't know where it was. Hopefully somebody listening to this even will maybe start to find out, and there's a whole area of research in Balgriffin, the St. Dulach's, Balgriffin and so on, to bring it together, and especially now with so many people moving into the area. There were studies done on it in the 1880s, 1890s, but I don't know of any modern scholarship that has been done on it. When we look at a road like this, a lot of our memories go back just to the 20th century, and by a bit of research we go back maybe to the 19th and 18th century. But as I was saying about the castle and so on, we can go back a lot further, both through the Registry of Deeds and also through the different books that have been produced before the disastrous fire when the records were destroyed in the forecourts, the fiance of Elizabeth and so on. And we can, from that, pick up the different people that lived in the big house in the area. There is so much that could be done, and there is so much history about this area, and Hole in the Wall Road is right up the centre. Ex Maria Virgine, gaudete, 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 Christus
Estate. You remember me when the west wind moves upon the fields.
We've come to the end of the first documentary in our From Byway to Highway series. Please do join us next week for part two of our journey through time along the Hole in the Wall Road. This documentary is dedicated to the memory of Michael Farrell, a great inspiration to me in the making of this documentary series, and who sadly passed away in 2016 just prior to recording the series. Until the sun in his jealous sky, when we walked in fields of gold.